The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you? They're useless this morning. I mean, very, very quick to insult me, but gosh.
That's, you know, usual stuff for
Howard. I suppose that is. That's normal.
Exactly.
That is normal.
Boker Tov, Moedem Lesimcha. A little Pesach related snippet before we get into the main stuff. There's an Israeli company called Vibrant. It's a company that's based in Yokneam. And this is a company that has developed a non-drug vibrating capsule in order to treat chronic constipation. So now you get why it's related to Pesach. But this is really serious. This is a really serious thing.
April
this company
Fool's.
Is raised.
No.
No, this is not an April Fool, Howard. I know you're pinching the punch for the beginning of the month, but this is not an April Fool joke. This is a genuine story. A company called Vibrant. It's raised $7.5 million. Overall, the company has raised $25 million. And this is a little vibrating capsule that is swallowed when needed, and it mechanically stimulates contraction of the bowel, which according to the company is gentle and not very uncomfortable. The word very is very much in there. Not very uncomfortable.
Right, yeah. Only quite uncomfortable.
Only marginally uncomfortable.
Oh, my word.
But this is a non-drug treatment.
It's none like swallowing of these a kind drill of rig.
Sorry, I didn't hear.
It's like swallowing a drill rig of some sort.
I don't know. I don't know why you would say that, Howard. I don't know where you would jump to that sort of a conclusion from and how you would know that. But
I don't know. It just
but
seems,
yes, but,
wow.
but it, yeah, it's a little bit like that.
I mean,
we've seen all kinds of little devices encapsulated in capsules. Given imaging, for example, has the camera that you can literally swallow, and that takes images of your intestines and your internal bowels and all the rest of it for people who suffer from that sort of thing. But now we've got a slightly different version of that little mechanical capsule that you can swallow. We're told that 15% of the population suffer from chronic constipation. And so this is apparently
and
for them.
And that's not just over Pesach. I mean, I'm sure that number shoots up
that
into the
is around
high 80s.
Yeah. I mean, Pesach is the high season, but it definitely, yeah. I mean, it's a relevant story for us this week, but, you know, it's just a fascinating
it gives
new
freedom
take
a whole
on
new meaning, doesn't it?
Exactly.
All right. Before we carry on, let me just wrap up the sports question because no one's getting it right. The sports question this morning is an anagram. Which famous Turkish footballer's name is this? Yardis El Polfo. Jenny says, Jenny Fleischer says, is it Pele? And David Zimmerman says, what about Hakan Şükür? No, the answer. You're going to kill Louis. You're going to kill Louis. Yardis El Polfo. It's April Fool's Day. Oh, Louis. I don't know. I don't think you mess with sports people like that, but that is the answer. That is the answer. All right, Anthony Reich, let's take a look at some of the big stories that are taking place in Israel. Israel is preparing to vaccinate its teenagers as soon as the FDA approves the use of the vaccine on those aged below 16. When is
this
expected to happen?
Yeah, so I mean, this is a big story. Well, this is due to happen quite soon. I mean, Israel is already gearing up for vaccinating the 12 to 15-year-olds. I'm not quite sure when FDA approval will be received, but we understand that it's on the verge of being received right now. This application has gone into the FDA, and I guess that the information coming out of the FDA as part of its investigation is relatively positive. And this 12 to 15-year-old age group is a really important one because in the first instance, they are the people who least adhere to the rules in terms of wearing masks and social distancing and things like that. And we can really understand why people of that age want to be with their friends and they want to do the things that they're accustomed to doing. And of course, they're concentrated in classes at school. So by vaccinating this age group, then we'll effectively remove that threat and allow a much more cohesive and coherent schooling system for those high school students who fall into that age group. So this is an exciting new development, and the Pfizer announced that they are ready to roll this out as soon as possible. Of course, the Israeli Health Minister, Yuli Edelstein, said that the Pfizer announcement is terrific news, and there is nothing more in order. There's nothing more now that we need in order to roll this out other than the FDA approval. So this is just another step forward in the development of, you know, what's the way in which a coronavirus is being treated in Israel. And I think that this is really going to be important, an important development, almost as important as the original rollout of the vaccine. And this age group is a really critical one. Not to say that others are not. I mean, I know we thought that the older people, because of their susceptibility, were always going to be the most important age group to receive the vaccine. And indeed, that has turned out to be the case. We've seen in Israel the massive, massive reduction in the number of people infected by coronavirus. The hospitals now are back to a normal kind of operating level. Much, much fewer people in hospital in serious condition with the virus, and many, many fewer being diagnosed with the virus. So the vaccine, the Pfizer vaccine that Israel has used in the most part, has been very, very effective indeed. And we hope that that will continue to roll out not only to the high school students, but in the fullness of time also to the younger age group, those children who are in kindergartens and in primary school, also hopefully will in the near future be able to receive the vaccination. And, you know, this is really, really great news. The problem is that initially the virus seemed to affect older people a lot more. But in recent times, some of the new variants seem to have also had quite a significant effect on the younger generation. So I think now we're at the stage where it's really important, not only for the protection of the older people, but indeed for the protection of that age group as well, that they get the vaccine as soon as possible.
Mm. And the one thing that we've seen with people traveling to South Africa from Israel over this period is, whereas the adults have been vaccinated, the children haven't been. So that's caused a little bit of complications. They've had to come here and sort of keep away from other adults, from the elderly for a period just to make sure. So I think that it will make life a lot simpler once the children, once the younger generation is vaccinated as well.
Absolutely. And when you have a look at the numbers of Israel's vaccination program, 5.2 million people already vaccinated at least with one dose, and 4.8 million people now received both doses of the vaccine, out of a total population of approximately 9.3 million. That's a very significant number, and especially when you start to remove the people who are not eligible to be vaccinated, it gives us a very, very high percentage. And we certainly see that in the general freedom of movement and the new activities that have opened up over Pesach. We definitely feel the effects of it.
Prime Minister Netanyahu has been appealing to those former Likud members who were elected to the Knesset as members of other parties to return home, a whole new meaning of returning home. Is there any real prospect that this is going to be successful?
I have my doubts. I mean, it's interesting that the Prime Minister has been relatively quiet since the election. I think it's been a strategy of his not to say too much following the election. Newspapers have said that Netanyahu's post-election silence has the opposition imploding. It's been this tactic that he's tried to adopt in order to try to keep the upper hand as best that he can. But it's clear that he can see that he is not succeeding in getting past that significant 60-member majority that he needs in order to secure himself another term as prime minister. And so he was quoted yesterday appealing to people like Gideon Saar and even Naftali Bennett to return home, because these people are considered to be natural supporters of the Likud in the traditional Likud sense, but that have come fallen foul of relations with Netanyahu, with the way in which Likud is currently operating. And Gideon Saar in particular was a dyed-in-the-wool Likud member many, many years as a member of the Likud, ultimately found that he had nothing against the Likud, nothing against the policies of the Likud or the platform that the Likud follows. He just couldn't operate within that particular environment, the environment that Prime Minister Netanyahu has created in the Likud. He couldn't operate. He couldn't work with the Prime Minister himself. And so he decided to join the change bloc and to walk away from the Likud to form his own party. He couldn't quite see himself joining one of the other existing parties. So instead, he's started his own party. And it is my view that many of these parties, certainly the Gideon Sar, Tikva Chadasha party, and potentially even other parties, may well ultimately fold back into the Likud in the fullness of time once the prime minister, once the Netanyahu era is over, once that conflict-driven situation that we've found within the Likud is passed. It's very, very possible that people like Gideon Sar and Naftali Bennett may well join the Likud again, fold their parties back into the Likud. It seems a logical thing. But right now, I just don't see it happening. There are some people who speculate that Naftali Bennett may still be open to the possibility of joining a Likud-led coalition. I certainly have my doubts. Gideon Sar, for sure, is intent not to support the prime minister under any circumstances. He definitely is going to be part of the change camp rather than any support for the perpetuation of Netanyahu's era as prime minister. But there potentially are individuals who may well be enticed back into the Likud if what they're offered is going to be enough. And it's always about what's being offered, the price that it has to be paid versus the benefit, cost-benefit analysis that goes on within the political sphere. If people are offered jobs that are significantly important enough to warrant them crossing back to the Likud, I can see a few people in that camp who may well be available to be enticed, but I'm not quite sure if the prime minister has enough currency to offer what they really need in order to be brought back. So I think that this is just a futile attempt in order to just try and test the waters, but ultimately I don't think it's going to be very successful.
Really?
The interesting thing is that the first business of the Knesset, which will convene next week, even though we don't yet have a government formed, the first business of the Knesset is going to consider a law that will ban people who've been charged with corruption from being prime minister. Now, obviously, a lot of people are waking up and saying, hey, this looks like a law that's particularly targeted at Prime Minister Netanyahu himself. The irony is that it's not really, because the law will not apply retroactively, and therefore Prime Minister Netanyahu will not be subject to this law, even though he is under charges now for corruption. But there is a view that this situation should not arise again, and therefore this hole really needs to be plugged, and that we need to have a law which says in the future that if there is a prime minister who is charged with corruption, that he should immediately be forced to relinquish his position and to allow the case to go ahead without the complication of him serving as the head of government at the same time.
Yeah, it certainly does look like it's geared there, but maybe it's not incorrect as a principle. Finally, Israelis spent an average of 41 days each year watching Netflix. Wow. All right. But I mean, I don't really know what that means unless I understand how it compares to other countries.
Well, I mean, let's just take it objectively. That's like almost a month and a half of your life that you're never going to get back again every year. Now, obviously, this particular survey has been focused at the time of the lockdown. And so I have to assume that it's a little bit exaggerated in terms of what people might do on a regular day without lockdown. But the interesting thing is that South Africans apparently are very, very similar, watching, I think, 42 days are worth of Netflix each year. I don't know if that includes you, Howard, and your family, but it sounds like a lot of TV watching to me. And yet, this is quite way down
and
the list.
I suppose that's per screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite way down the list. Sorry, the South Africans, not 42, but 45 days, according to the survey. But that's quite far down the list. It's something like 32nd on the list of a list of 40-odd countries. The top Netflix-watching countries are mostly in South America: Peru, Argentina, Chile, Mexico, Colombia. People there watching 70 to 80 days on average of Netflix. Okay, just on Netflix.
Real
I don't know what else they watch outside of Netflix. Wow. If they've got other TV, other shows that they're watching. This is simply taken on Netflix. 70 to 80 days, that sounds like a lot to me. And if you think that that's like just a South American issue, then we can go down to the next group of countries, Canada, Brazil, US, Switzerland, UK, Netherlands, Ireland, New Zealand, France, and Sweden are at watching an average of 51 to 66 days worth of Netflix every year. Now, that sounds like a lot of TV watching to me, and Netflix in particular. Interestingly, the countries at the very, very bottom of the list in terms of the least number of days spent watching Netflix are in Central Europe, Hungary, Lithuania, Czech Republic, Croatia, Slovakia. You know, I don't know. What do you guys think about this? This sounds like a lot of TV watching.
And it's just quite unbelievable. I mean, those numbers are no joke.
Those numbers are certainly no joke. So that came as a bit of a surprise to me. Especially when I thought that 41 days for Israelis was a lot, but apparently not.
Yeah, but you don't have Sundays.
Well, we have other days of the week, and trust me, people are watching a lot of Netflix. I mean, I don't know whether that serves to say that, you know, Netflix are dishing up such good content that people simply can't resist watching the fantastic shows. I mean, there is admittedly some good content on Netflix, but it just sounds like a lot of TV watching to me. Anyway, I'm sure that you guys will have a think about that.
Yeah, and I want our listeners' view on it. 34519 or 0618951019. Do you fall in that average? Do you think that you have watched, what's it, South Africa? 46 days.
45 days
of Netflix in the last year. Wow.
Yeah, and that's measured, by the way, by hours, the number of hours that are watched. In other words, that is 45 days around the clock.
What? Whoa. I was going to ask you, how do they define that? Is that 12 hours or 24?
Yeah, it's the number of hours. They're actually counting, not even hours, they're counting in minutes. For example, the South Americans, they're watching 101 to 115,000 minutes a year, which is 24 hours around the clock. Anyway, absolutely, have a think about that. I'll leave you guys to enjoy the end of Pesach. I hope that the matzot have been good. I hope that the knedlach have been good. We're going to finish it all off, commemorate not only the crossing of the Red Sea, but in fact the freeing up of the Red Sea on this particular occasion. Shabbat Shalom, Chag Sameach, and we will be back on Monday as usual.
Anthony Reich, thank you as always. It is 8:01. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning.